Okay, everybody. Parshas Bahalusha, at least in Chutz Laretz. A bit of a bittersweet Parsha here today because, Baruch Hashem, we had an amazing, amazing banquet. Another round of Ber Miriam alumni now going back to Chutz Laretz. If you guys are listening, you're amazing. Stay in touch. Keep on doing fantastic things. The girls had a tremendous, tremendous year. And be in touch and give me feedback and critique on the shiurim, etc., etc. All right. Anyway, the parsha is packed. The parsha is absolutely packed. We start off with Bahalosh Chasaneros that Aaron is instructed how to light the menorah. We talked about the consecration, right? The elevation, right? The glorification of the Levium, right? Getting ready to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. In the Mishkan, Korban Pesach, Pesach Sheni, we have this poetic language about the Jews traveling together. Kosh Baruch Hu is leading them through the desert. They're camped according to their camps. The Nesiim are leading them. There are trumpets. Right? There's like the dramatic illustration of how Bnei Israel are traveling towards Eretz Yisrael after getting the Torah, right? About to fulfill their destiny. Right? Moshe invites Yisrael to come with them. There's the parsha of Vahib and Saw Aaron Vayomer Moshe, and then everything takes a sharp left. Right, everything goes south. This is Vayiham, Kim is Onanim, the people start complaining. Fasav Sufa, Sherbi Kirbu, Savu Tava, people start cultivating a craving and complaining about the man. Moshe despairs from leading the people. Hashem tells them to create a Sanhedrin to help. There's Eldad, there's Medad, story about them, which we're not going to get to right now. There's a plague of Slav. Bnei Yisrael get punished for complaining about the man and the Slav. And finally, at the end of the Parsha, Miriam famously speaks Lashon Hara about Moshe, gets Tzaras, Moshe davens for her, Bnei Yisrael wait for her, right? And that's the end of the Parsha. So let's get into it. Let's start at the beginning. Bahalovska Saneros Aaron is told to light the menorah, instructed about some of those details. And Rashi famously asks, why is the menorah, right, listed next to the Nesiim? Right, the end of Parshas Naso, in last week's Parsha, right, we have a whole long list of all these korbanos that the Nesiim brought. We talked about it last week. Tons of korbanos, right, the exact same thing 12 times. Right, that's the end of Parshas Naso. Beginning of Baal Oscha, Aaron is told to light the menorah. And Rashi says, what do these two things have to do with each other? So the answer is that Aaron saw the Nesiim bringing their korbanos, and he felt badly. He felt badly that he wasn't one of them, right? He wasn't involved with them in inaugurating the Mishkan, right? Neither Aaron nor Shevet Levi were one of those, listed as bringing the korbanos, right? There were 12 Shvatim, but you have, obviously, Yosef, two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and Shevet Levi is not involved. So Hashem said to Aaron, don't worry, your lot is greater than theirs, right? You get to light the menorah. And so many questions, right? So many questions. And the Ramban already asks on Rashi, how is the menorah a consolation? Right? Why didn't Hashem console him with so many other things he could have said, right? For example, the Aaron brought Ketores, the Kohen Gadol brings Ketores every morning and night. Only Aaron gets to do that. Or the Avodah and Beis HaMikdash in the Mishkan on Yom Kippur. Right? Or the Minchas Chavitin he brought every single day. Or the other Korbanos. The Kohen Gadol was able to, if whatever the Kohen Gadol wanted to do, he could do. He could go bring whatever Korban he wanted. Right? He could interject, I want to shech this, I want to burn this. Right? He did whatever he wanted. Right. And Shevet Levi, I mean, listen, I understand they didn't bring korbanos to the Chanukah Sam Mishkan, but they were literally the ones chosen to represent the Kodesh Baruch Hu, right, in the Mishkan. Right? And if you look at the Chanukah Sam Mishkan, Aaron actually did bring korbanos, a ton of them, actually, right, much bigger than the Nesiim brought. Right? And if you'll argue, says the Ramban, that those korbanos were commanded by Hashem, and the Nesiim brought those on their own volition, right, and Aaron was upset they didn't bring optional korbanos, well, okay, but that's nice, but the menorah is also a commandment from Hashem. So how does that even help anything? So there's a lot to unpack over here. A lot of angles you can take and a lot of details you have to work out. Right? Just for the sake of brevity, we're going to focus on one aspect. Let's focus on the menorah itself. How is that a nechama? How is that a consolation to Aaron? Why did that make him feel better any more than, let's say, the Ketores or any of other avodah that the Kohen Gadol would do in the Mishkan? So Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel quotes from Chaim Shmuel Levitz and Sivus Moser. Right? Both of them were Rosh Yeshiva at the Mir, so that makes sense. Or Mashkichim at the Mir. Rav Chaim was Rosh Yeshiva or Mashkir? I don't remember. Not, the top of my head, I don't remember. I thought it was Rosh Yeshiva, but I could be wrong. Anyway, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel quotes from Chaim Shmuel Levitz and Sivus Moser, who explains that the menorah had a certain aspect of Hakaras HaTov to it. The Medrash says, in Bamidbar Rabbah, that Aharon lighting the menorah was Hakaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kind of like quote-unquote paying back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for lighting the way for Bnei Yisrael in the desert, right, with the Amud Esh, right? When Bnei Israel took them through the desert with the Amud Anan during the day and the Amud Ha'esh at night, right? It was Hakaras HaTov. It was quote unquote paying back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or for guiding Bnei Israel through the desert, right? The Medrash there gives a mashal of two people walking together. There's a blind person and a healthy person, right? Someone who can see. They're traveling. And when they finally get to the destination, the healthy person tells the blind person, do me a favor, light a candle in the room where we're staying. So the blind man turns to them and says, what do you mean? The whole way you've been taking me. What does that mean? You made sure I know where to go, etc. Now you need me to light you a candle? And the guy who can see says, yeah, so you don't think I did you just a favor while we were traveling and you feel like you have to pay me back for something? Here's your opportunity to do something tiny, small, do something, you know, just kind of like, you know, get that off your back and off your head, right? Here's your opportunity. So the same thing over here. Kosh Baruch Hu, right, took care of us, guided us throughout the whole Mishkan, throughout the whole Midbar, throughout the whole desert. And the Kosh Baruch Hu said, just pay me back by lighting the menorah. Obviously, Hashem didn't need the menorah, but he said, just like, do this tiny thing for me, light the menorah. Here. Again, what does that mean exactly? How does that pay back? That's, again, in Midrashim, we're not necessarily meant to be taken literally. But, okay, so the menorah had an aspect of Hakaras HaTov. That, says Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, that was the special aspect of the menorah that the menorah had over the korbanos. Right? Said Rav Chaim, this is what Hashem was saying to Aaron. Your avodah is greater since it represents Hakaras HaTov, where Bnei Israel show their thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and pay him back, kiviyachol. Right? We don't find this aspect by any other avodah in the Mishkan, except for the menorah. And obviously, there are tons and tons of makoros throughout Chazal, right, about the greatness of Hakaras HaTov, right? Maybe none as striking as the Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, as my Rebbe Rav Yonason Sachs likes to quote, the Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo writes that the entire purpose of creation is liyeda uliyoda. Liyeda, to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and recognize God's hand in everything, uliyoda, and to give him thanks for it. And that is the purpose of creation, says Ramban. But Rav Chaim and Rav Dustin Svi, they also just bring a couple other makoros. So many aspects of this medrash, right, shine a light on so many different parts of Hakaras HaTov and show how far we have to go, right, to attain this midah of being makir tov. Right, we have to be makir tov, right, even when the person or the entity receiving their thanks has absolutely no need for it. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need our thanks. He does not need the light in the Mishkan. Right? What could Hashem possibly gain from our Hakaras HaTov? He doesn't need anything. Yet, Bnei Yisrael were told to light the menorah, right, to be Makir Tov. Hakaras HaTov is not important only for the giver, right, but so much more so for the receiver, meaning the person who received the goodness and has to give back, right, has to be Makir Tov. Right? Hakaras HaTov is not just paying someone back for something. It's important for the person who received the favor, right, to give back, even if the person who gave the favor doesn't need it at all. That's what we see from this medrash, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't need us to give back to him, but still, when Hakaras HaTov recognizing that someone has done something for you, that is chashuv, even if the person who did it for you doesn't need any thanks whatsoever. We have to be makir tov as well, right? Points out Rav Chaim and Rav Nathan Svi from the medrash, even to inanimate objects. Right? Well, not from this medrash, but from a different medrash. Rav Nathan Svi quotes a famous Rashi that Aaron had to do the first three makos, right? Not, because Moshe had to have a Hakaras HaTov to the Nile, right, for saving his life when he was in the basket, right, and also to the ground that hid the Mitzri, so he couldn't do Kenan, right, that saved his life. Rav Chaim points out that Moshe saved the daughters of Yisro from the shepherds, right, who helped them water their flock, right? Remember that when Moshe went to Yisro, he saved their daughters. The Medrash Tanhuma says that there's the mashal of that situation, right, was a person who gets bit by a donkey, then runs to the river to soak his foot, and while he's soaking his foot, he sees a child drowning, and he dives in and saves them. And the child thanks him, says, oh, thank you so much for saving my life, and the guy says, don't thank me, thank the donkey, because without the donkey who bit me, I never would have been here. So too Moshe said to the Bnos Yisro, to Yisro's daughters, he said, don't thank me for saving you from the shepherds, thank the Mitzri who I killed, because without him, I never would have fled, right, Mitzrayim. Right, so that, again, we have to show Hakaras HaTov, even to inanimate objects, even to people who are dead. Right? There's a concept, again, as we see, it's not for the person we're giving thanks to, it's for our own selves, right, to be Makir Tov. Right? We have to be Makir Tov even for something so small, right, that even when the person who does the chesed for us, right, it's really for them. But it happens to benefit us as well. The Gemara says in Yevamos, quotes says Rav Chaim. Said the Gemara says in Yevamos Taf Samach Gemo, that Rabbi Chia, fascinating story actually, Shalom Bayis Shmuz, that Rabbi Chia's wife used to frustrate him, used to aggravate him a lot. Nevertheless, says the Gemara, whenever Rabbi Chia would see something that she would like, right, let's see, flowers, whatever it is, he would still bring it to her. And one of the other Amorim said to him, Rav said to him, well, doesn't she annoy you? So Rav Chiya said, and again, this is probably a shir in and of itself, Rav Chiya said, it's enough that she raises our kids and saves me from Avera, meaning she saves me from inappropriate thoughts because she, you know, puts on makeup and she's beautiful, etc. So that I owe her that gratitude. So I have to, it's worth it for me to be Makar Tov for that. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, those are two very different reasons to thank someone. Right? Again, what did Rav Chiya say? Very two specific details. I'm sure his wife did other things for him, but he said, she raises our kids and she saves me from sin because she, you know, puts on makeup or whatever. Those are two very different things, says Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim says, raising kids, as anyone will tell you, right, is super hard work, full of sacrifice, dedication, long hours, exhausted, right? tons of effort. But making herself beautiful, that's probably something she would have done anyway, right? Girls, like to, as you guys know, you put on makeup to impress other people, but also because people, the girls like to feel beautiful themselves. It's very likely she would have done that anyway, well, she's not married to Rav Chiya. But Rav Chiya equated the two, right? Both were equal reasons for him to show his appreciation. So you even have to do Hakar Zatov, you even have to be Makir Tov to someone if they're doing something for themselves that also benefits you. So we know, again, we know all the major mitzvahs associated with the Hakar Zatov, Kibud Av V'Em, etc., etc. But there are, for us, just for now, there are so many other instances and opportunities where we can show Hakar Zatov. Right? Every little compliment, every little thank you is appreciated, right? No matter how awkward or how cringe or how silly you may feel, right? Guarantee that the recipient of the Hakar Zatov is touched and feels appreciated and seen and heard, right? More than you know. Right, so look for those opportunities, right, however simple they may be, right, take advantage of them, because as Ramban says, right, that's literally, right, the purpose of creation, l'yeda u'liyoda. Okay, the pasuk says about Bnei Yisrael's travels in the Midbar, and part of the pasuk says Al Pi Hashem Yachnu V'Al Pi Hashem Yiso. Right, a pretty well known pasuk that basically Bnei Yisrael traveled, right, Al Pi Hashem, and what that, the simple pshat, what that means is that basically whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu set the cloud of glory on the Mishkan, everybody would camp, set up camp here. And whenever the cloud would lift, they would realize that that's time for everybody to move, right? Time for everybody to go. They would pack up, and then the cloud would obviously lead them to wherever they were going. And whenever the cloud rested, that's where they would encamp as well. There is a fascinating Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Aleph on the base. Technical at first, seems just halachic, but there's a tremendous musar that you can learn from it. Like Ula says over there, that Rabbi Yossi holds that the malacha of soser, destroying, is only a malacha if it's done in order to rebuild in that exact place. Now, what does that mean? Just to start, take a step back, right? The malachos we've discussed before, we've discussed in seminary, discussed on the podcast, malachos are creative actions, right? When we rest from malach on Shabbos, it's not because we're trying to rest and not do any physical work, it's because we're trying to rest from creative activities to remind ourselves who the real Creator is. That's what Shabbos is, a time to step back and realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, 7 days, etc., etc. So we refrain from creative activities. And you have the 39 malachos, right, that we took from the Mishkan, right? You have the 39 creative acts that we refrain from, and obviously all the details that comes after that. One of them is soser, is destroying. Now, that doesn't make sense because destroying is destructive, right? It's not creative. So there's a rule that if anytime you have some inherently destructive malacha, like soser, there's also korea, tearing. So if you have destroying, right, that can only be considered a malacha if it's constructive in some way. So Rabbi Yossi Ula says that Rabbi Yossi holds that soser, destroying, is only a malacha d'oraisa, it's only asur d'oraisa, if it's done in order to rebuild, not only in order to rebuild, i.e. that makes it constructive, right? Not only if it's only ordered to be rebuilt, but only if it's in order to be rebuilt in the exact same place, right, where it is. Right? Meaning if a person destroys something in order to build something elsewhere, like you take apart a house, right, and to use the bricks somewhere else, that's not soser mi deraisa. But if you take apart the house to build the house again in that exact place, then that is soser deraisa, that is destroying deraisa. Asks Rabbah, I don't understand. As we pointed out, all the malachos and Shabbos are learned out from the Mishkan. Right? When Bnei Yisrael dismantled the Mishkan, it was in order to build it in another place, like we just talked about. Right, it was in order to go from one place to the next. That's why the cloud lifted up. Bnei Yisrael packed up. They went to somewhere else, and they built the Mishkan and all their tents. So, what do you mean that destroying is only to rebuild in the same exact place? So, Ula answers, not really, because by the Mishkan, the pasuk says, as we quoted, "Al pi Hashem yachnu v'al pi Hashem yiso." Right, they traveled based on Hashem's word, and therefore it was as if it was built in the same exact place. Now, The obvious question is, what does that mean? When Bnei Yisrael traveled from place to place in the desert, there's literally a list of all the travels of Bnei Yisrael at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, right? In part, that's Parshas Maaseh. Right? What do you mean? That since it was Al Pi Hashem, therefore they really built the Mishkan in the same place? They didn't. They clearly didn't. They moved from place to place. So the Torah to me, so some want to answer, the Torah Tumimah, for example, says that simply it must be that sometimes Bnei Yisrael were commanded to take down the Mishkan only for Hashem to, like, you know, pull the offer and rescind the order, right, and command them to rebuild it in the exact same spot. With all due humility and respect, we don't find a record of that anywhere in the Chumash. So I'm not sure exactly what he's getting at. But again, back to Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, he gives an unbelievable answer. In Sifos Moser, it's actually on his comments to Bishalach, but okay, it doesn't matter. What the Gemara means, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, is that Bnei Yisrael's residence in the desert was Eitzel Hashem, was with Hashem. That's what Al Pi Hashem means. That they were always with Hashem. The physical location didn't matter. As long as they were with Hashem, right, they were in the same place. And he gives a great mashal. He says when a baby, or let's say a child, right, goes with their mother, let's say, on a bunch of errands, if you ask the kid where they were all morning, the kid inevitably would answer, I went out with mommy. Right? It doesn't matter that they went to the food store or the pharmacy or the library. They went out with mommy. That's how Bnei Yisrael's travels in the Midbar were. That's what the Gemara means. That since they were Al Pi Hashem, it was as if they were in the same place. Since they were with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, it was as if they were in the same place. Now, first of all, this is a tremendous lesson for you guys who just left Sem. Right, we had our banquet a couple nights ago. It doesn't matter where you are physically. Right, you'll always be part of the greater Bar Merim family. Right, that's just how we roll. Right, even Chutz Laaretz, you're always back here. If you put your mind to it, if you're always with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, then you're always a seminary girl, etc., etc. Right? This applies to yeshiva guys as well. Right? And just because you're not in the physical four walls of the yeshiva doesn't mean you're not in yeshiva. It doesn't mean you can't have the attitude of religious growth. That can happen anywhere. But this is the ultimate way to live your life, right? Al Pi Hashem Yachnu, Al Pi Hashem Yiso. Right? Travel Al Pi Hashem. Right? Make decisions Al Pi Hashem. Date Al Pi Hashem. Marry Al Pi Hashem. Raise children Al Pi Hashem. Work Al Pi Hashem. Right? That's the ultimate goal. And that you can do anywhere. Right? Your physical location doesn't matter, right? When you live your life Al Pi Hashem, you're literally walking with a Kodesh Baruch Hu wherever you go, and that's considered where you are, right? When you listen to a shir in the car, or when you dress tzniusly in some random town in Hickville, or God knows where you go on vacation, when you spend money on Jewish things, etc., that's Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yiso. That's living your life Al Pi Hashem. What's some good advice for starting this, right? For actually accomplishing this. So let's say you just left Sem, Yeshiva, or whatever. How do you make this a reality? So Rav Melech Biederman points out that the Shlach HaKadosh says that this pasuk is a reminder that we should live our entire lives Al Pi Hashem. What does that literally mean? Al on Pi, mouth, Hashem. Meaning in our mouths should always be Hashem. Everything we do, we should always try and say, Emetz Hashem, Bezus Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Chazdei Hashem. Right? That is a simple yet effective way, right, to bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu into our lives. Right? I'm going to the store, Mitzvah Hashem. I'm going to buy this, Mitzvah Hashem. Right? I was successful in business, Chazdei Hashem. Right? To always just mention a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Right? That's a simple way to start, or at least continue, right, thinking and keeping Hashem in your life. Right? If you keep on using those phrases, there's no way for Hashem not to make his way into your daily life. Right? You're always saying Mitzvah Hashem. Right? When it's, that's literally, you know, what the phrase is, Shem Shamayim Shgurim Piv. But if you have a Kodesh Baruch Hu stuck in your mouth, right, that's literally, you're on your way to living Al Pi Hashem, and that's the ultimate goal. Okay, now if you look at Sefer Bamidbar, it almost seems to be two separate storylines. Right, the first part of Bamidbar Noso and half of Baluska, right, is the story of basically the Jews traveling in the desert, the formation of the camps, dedication of the Mishkan, right? Again, very dramatic, powerful, right? Discussing the grandeur, etc., etc. You know, you can imagine that this is like some dramatic music accompanying, right, the Bal Kore, if you need to imagine something else, if he's not doing so well. But after that, you have maybe the most bizarre thing that you find in the Chumash. You find the psukim of Vayibin Soa Aron, right? Again, three psukim in the middle of the parsha. You know these psukim because we say them in Shul, Vayibin Soa Aron, Vayomar Moshe, Kuma Hashem, Yafutzo Evecha, Vinusim, Senecha, Vipanecha, Uvnuchoy Omar, Shuvah Hashem, Revos, Alfa Yisrael. If you look in the Sefer Torah, they are surrounded by backwards, upside down nuns. Nuns, letter nun, upside down. Very odd. Yeah? And interestingly enough, right, these after these psukim, that's when everything started going downhill. Right? The Jews complain to Moshe. They have a Torah for meat, etc. Right? Lashon Hara, Meraglim, Korach, v'chule. Right? The question is, what in the world happened? Right? What in the world happened? Right? Again, aside from, taking out the fact that Rashi says that that parsha should not be there. Right? It separates from Puranos. It separates from Rashi. Right? It separates. Bnei Yisrael ran away from Har Sinai. Right? The pasuk says that they traveled from Har Sinai. Rashi says it was like a little kid running away from school, didn't want to have any more Isurim. Right? And right after that, there's the complaining. What could possibly have gone wrong? Bnei Yisrael are going into Eretz Yisrael with a full fanfare, literally of trumpets, etc. What happened? So before we can answer this question, you got to ask another question. As we mentioned, right before, after the Anunim Afruchim, the Bnei Yisrael complained to Hashem. Right? The Torah says, "Vayi Amkim Misonanim." Right? Bnei Yisrael start complaining. Right? And two psukim later, Bnei Yisrael desire meat. Right? They complain about the delicacies they used to have in Egypt, with delicacies tongue-in-cheek. Right? Fish, meat, cucumbers, melons, watermelon, right? Garlic, whatever. And Hashem is furious. Obviously, he says in the Slav, his son's a plague. Problem is, in Sefer Shmos, the Jews do exactly the same thing. Right? In Parshas B'Shalach, right? They complain also, we have no food, we have no water. And Hashem's response is quite different. Right? Right after Az Yashir, Bnei Yisrael, right, complain, if only we had died in Egypt, etc., etc., we had meat in Mitzrayim, v'chule, v'chule, you're going to kill us. Instead, Hashem sends the man, right, the bear Miriam, yeah, right, and he sends the slav, and he sends the meat, and he sends the birds. What is the difference between the complaining in Parshas B'Shalach and the complaining in Parshas Baal Oscha? Right, clearly, Hashem felt that in Parshas Baal Oscha, it was not warranted. So what was the difference? So perhaps we can, you know, use classic, you know, Brisker terminology and explain that there's complaining, and you know this to be true. There's complaining and there's complaining. Right? One type of complaining is legitimate. Right? If you contract someone to build you a 6-story house, well, that's a little crazy. But let's say a 6-bedroom house, right? And he only builds you 4 bedrooms, so that's a legitimate complaint. Right? When you ask for those other 2 bedrooms, right? That's you're well within your rights. Right? But if your parents, let's say, buy you a house, and then you complain that the house is not big enough, well, you kind of get the idea. Right, so that's exactly what was going on over here. Bnei Yisrael, Akash Baruch Hu took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Bnei Yisrael assumed that Hashem would figure out how to feed them, which is reasonable, right? So when that didn't happen right away, Bnei Yisrael complained. And Hashem said, okay, no problem, man, slav, bear Miriam, water, etc. But in our Parsha, they already had all that stuff. Right? So that's like complaining about the stuff, the house that the parents bought them. Right, that's not nice. And if you look at, and that's inappropriate, obviously, that's not with a proper karas hatov, like we talked about before. You even notice this in the Chumash, right? If you look at the text, right, the word that the Torah uses to tell me in Bishalach, in Sefer Shmos, that Bnei Yisrael complained, is Vayilonu, that they complained. In Bamidbar, the Pasuk says, right, in our Parsha, in Baal Oscha, Vayi Ha'am Kemis Onanim, which I guess literally translates as, the nation took Kemis Onanim. They were looking for complaining. That's much different. Right? That's obviously much, much different. Right? Again, when it talks about the meat, they created a desire. Right? I think the article translated as something like cultivated a craving or something like that. But that's completely different. That's like, that requires effort. Right? They didn't just happen to be like, oh, by the way, we don't have anything. That means they went out of their way to look for problems, to complain about something. And then if that's true, then you can start understanding what went wrong, right? But Moshe Rabbeinu reaches out to Yisrael, inviting him to come to Eretz Yisrael. How did they end up turning left? It started with a complaint, right? An illegitimate complaint, right? Why does a person not complain? Why does a person complain illegitimately, right? Why does a person complain in a bad way? That's what we said before, because they're not Makar Tov. However, you're unable to see the value and the gifts that someone has done for you, that causes you to leave and you know, go astray, right? And that's as, you know, as the Chazal say in Pirkei Avos, Ezu Asher Samech Pachalko, right? Who is rich? Someone who is happy with what they have, right? That is for sure. You know, Bnei Yisrael, for whatever reason, right, were lacking at that point, right? Maybe if the Am is usually connotes the Erev Rav, so maybe they started it. Bnei Yisrael kind of took to it. Okay, whatever it is, Ezu Asher Samech Pachalko, right? Be happy with what you have, we should all be zocha to accomplish that. Now, it's also important to note, and this is what we mentioned in the seminary a couple days ago, but we'll definitely could I to say it again, that what led to all the downfall, all the really bad sins, right? If you had to list the bad sins of Bamidbar, we're talking the Meraglim, the Bnos Moav, Korach, those are the bad ones. But what led to all that? that a little bit of complaining, right? Again, what does Rashi say? That there was complaining and then there was the desire for meat, right? Those were different, right? Rashi says that Bnei Yisrael complained. What was the complaint? It doesn't say in the Chumash. So Rashi says they were traveling for 3 days straight towards Eretz Yisrael without a break. Now, first of all, if you know how Bnei Yisrael traveled in the Midbar, right, the Ananei HaKavod basically carried them. Second of all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Rashi himself writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant it for their own good, right? Rashi writes that Hashem wanted to take them into Eretz Yisrael as soon as possible, right? Obviously, you'd rather be at your destination sooner than kind of bumming around in the Midbar, in the wilderness, etc. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chashva L'tova, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do the Mechased, and they started complaining. Okay, problem is that compared to the big sins in Bamidbar, that's not such a big deal. Right, a little bit of complaining, a little bit of meat, right? A desire for meat. Okay, again, obviously they're not great, but they're not earth-shattering. Like, you know, it's not like these crazy rebelling against Moshe, saying we don't want to go the Eretz Yisrael, the Meraglim, Benos Moav. Those are big-time sins. A little complaining, okay. It's not not tzaddikim. I mean, they were great tzaddikim, but okay, then it's not terrible. So what's going on over here? How did that lead to that? So the question is actually reminiscent of a Gemara in Shabbos and on Daf Kuf Hey, and a Gemara in Nida as well, at the I think in the first parak, if I'm not mistaken. I'll quote the Gemara in Shabbos just because I have that in front of me. Rishim ben Elazar Omer Mishum Chilfa Bar Igra Shomer Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, Hamakari Begadav Bechamaso. If someone tears his clothing in anger, Famishaber Kalev Bechamaso, or he breaks his, you know, a cup in anger, or he, you know, scatters his money, throws away money in anger, it should be in his eyes as if he worshipped idols. Why in the world would you say that? So and this is the key line in the Gemara, or there are many key lines, but this is at least for now. Shekachi umenoso shel yitzhar hara, because this is the profession. This is how the yitzhar hara works. This is literally the game plan of the Yetzer Hara. Hayom omer lo osekach. Today he says to you, do this. Umachar omer lo osekach. Tomorrow he says, do this. Ad she'omer lo oved avodah zarah v'holech v'oved. Until he says, go do avodah zarah, and you go and do it. And this is how the Yetzer Hara works. Right? It doesn't get you to do big sins right out of the gate. But it doesn't say, go do avodah zarah. Of course, that's ridiculous. Again, he gets you to do small things. One thing leads to another. Right, to get dramatic for a second, divorces don't happen overnight. Right? Infidelity, Rahman al-Islam, doesn't happen overnight. Right? It's a small buildup of little things. Right? People okay, tell me the girls and the guys in yeshiva and the girls always ask, how do I not fall when I go back? And the answer is, it's in the little decisions. Right? It's not in the big things. It's in the little things. The details that we skip because we don't think they're important, right? The details that we don't think are small, that we think are too small to matter, right? Ironically, it's harder to make the right choice in the small things than it is in the big things, right? If a friend, this is get very, very dramatic, right? If a friend would tell you to do like meth, so obviously you'd laugh at them. But if someone offered you a joint nowadays, that's not so crazy, right? If someone would say, let's go to Vegas and spend Friday night on the strip, right? I would imagine you'd think that's not a great idea. But if someone would say, let's just check our phone for a couple of minutes on Friday night, okay, that's not such a big deal. It obviously is, but not comparatively, right? If someone would say, you know, I don't want you to ever learn Torah ever again, I would hope you would say no. But if someone said, let's skip this shir we usually go to so you could binge a show on Netflix, you might think about that. Right? And as the phrase goes, the devil is in the details. Right? The small things in and of themselves sometimes are not really such a big deal. But that's how you end up going down that road, right? And when you look back after 1, 2, 5, 10 years, you're going to wonder how you got there, right? How did you get to this place? And the answer is the small decisions you made along the way that took you there. And that's what happened to Bnei Yisrael, right? They're going towards Eretz Yisrael. The Mishkan is set up. They're traveling together. Everything is good to go. Right? Trumpets are blowing, v'chule. But all of a sudden, they take a turn for the worse. Why? Because, v'yihi amkavis onanim. They started complaining a little bit right here, a little bit here, a little bit there. They started desiring meat, etc. Not so bad, but that's what gets you down that road. The small decisions are what steers you down a certain path. And if you have the koch, if you can have the courage to make the right decisions and the small decisions, then you'll end up avoiding right the scary big decisions. Right, you won't end up right down that road where you might have to deal with those big issues in the future. Okay, let's do quickly. We're not going to do a deep dive into Lashon Hara because that's Tazria Mitzora stuff. But Miriam's Lashon Hara, let's just address it for a second. Rav Nosson Tzvi already quotes the Yalkut Shimoni that points out that Miriam's Lashon Hara was not classic Lashon Hara like we all think of, you know, hey, gossiping, you know, did you hear, blah, 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 blah. No, it says Yalkut Shimoni like this. Miriam's Kavachomer, Miriam's Lashon Hara was not so bad. And she got punished for it, right, with Saras, and Bnei Yisrael had to wait for her, etc. So Kavachomer, for us, we have to watch our mouths, meaning that the Yalkut Shimoni compares our Lashon Hara and Miriam's Lashon Hara. It says the Yalkut Shimoni, Miriam didn't mean to speak badly about Moshe, right? Only intended to help their Shalom Bayis, right? He said that he's never with Tzipora, he's never hanging out with her. So he only wanted to help their Shalom Bayis. He didn't want Moshe, you know, and she's, again, and Moshe was her younger brother, right? Someone who theoretically is lesser, quote unquote, than her. And it says the Yalkut Shimoni, again, it's a discussion how, if this is actually true, but the Yalkut Shimoni says that she only spoke to herself. She didn't say it to anybody else, because the Pasuk says, Vayishma Hashem, that Hashem heard, i.e. no one else heard it. That shows she really only said it to herself. And yet she got punished. So Kal v'chomer us, who speak badly about other people on purpose, right, who don't really want to help them, right, who want to harm them, right, and we speak about people who are older and greater than us, and we speak badly, right, to other people, right, not only to ourselves. So Alakas kama v'kama, right, how much more so we have to be careful. Now, Lashon Hara needs no introduction, right, it just needs like chizik once in a while, like the Mesilas Yesharim, right, at the beginning, right, the great value of reading Mesilas Yesharim is not reading it once, but hearing it over and over and over. So too, the same thing about hearing Musar about Lashon Hara, if you're able to do a lesson a day, if you're able to do Shemir Salashon daily, so that is the best way to tackle Lashon Hara. Obviously, we'll talk about Lashon Hara next week with the Meraglim, etc. But practically, aside from learning halakos of Lashon Hara every single day, which is super important, and you should do that, but how do you avoid speaking Lashon Hara when you're not learning about Lashon Hara, right? Later in the day, 6 hours later, 10 hours later, right? How do you attack a midah that's so ingrained in us? So that's hard, right? Chazal explained, and Bali Musar explained that to attack the midah head on, that's very tough. Right, but sometimes, right, you can work on something else that will impact the thing you're trying to work on. Right, it's like a classic misdirection. Right, the Yetzer Hara is fighting you on Lashon Hara. Right, so you'll take another midah, something that's easier, that maybe is not fighting on you so hard. Right, and that midah will impact your desire and your ability to speak Lashon Hara. That's the best way to attack and work on your midahs. So one of the midahs for Dustin Sweden, many other Bali Musar say, is to try and see the good in every person. For example, if a person you know, right, does something to you that you don't like, right, let's say someone you know, someone you like, friend, close friend, relative, let's say they don't pay you back for a while, right? You lent them some money, they don't pay you back for a while. If it's someone you like admire, someone you're close with, it's no big deal at all, right? You might not even think about it, right? And if you do, you're happy to let them get away with like the, oh, I'll get you the money later, etc. But if it's someone you don't like, so then, or you don't have a good association with, so then you're marking off the days in the calendar, right? Then you're grumbling about it with your friends, right? You don't cut them any slack whatsoever, right? We can all think of examples where something happened with people we were close with, right? And that didn't bother us at all. And then the exact same thing happened with people we were not close with, and we were furious, right? So that's the advice. The advice the Chazal gave is that to work on your being, not necessarily Samech Bechelko, but being happy and getting along with other people, seeing the good, right, in other people, right? Because once you start seeing the good in other people, you become, inherently, you become closer to them. And you see that how great they are, right? You can appreciate them, and you become closer to them, and you can cut them some slack because, you know, okay, if your brother or sister borrowed $100, they haven't paid you back yet, it's not a big deal. Right, and at that point, right, you don't say any Lashon Hara, you don't start gossiping or whatever about that. You look at what this person did to me, oh, how dare they, etc. Right, work on seeing the good in people. That's a lot easier, perhaps, than attacking Lashon Hara, right, straight on. And Mitzvah Shem, that will help us, right, with the desire to speak badly about other people. Okay, everybody, have a tremendous Shabbos, and be in touch.